And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, joined by Catherine Buffy Henshaw. Catherine, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, David.
So we're going to be speaking mainly about the Redlands Footlighters theater production of Nevermore, the tales and poems of Edgar Allan Poe, something that you adapted and directed. But first, a bit about you. I know that your history in the Inland Empire, theater history anyway, goes back to 2005. Is that when it started, your history, or is that when the history started around here?
Great question. So I was born and raised in Riverside and spent the majority of my growing up years in the Midwest, in and out of theaters, community theaters, working in and around the performing arts. But when I came back in 2004 to Southern California, Redlands in particular, I saw an audition notice and I thought, maybe it's time to get back into this whole acting career thing. So I auditioned for Redlands Footlighters and I have not left. They have not been able to get rid of me since then. I fell in love with the community. So it's been wonderful to be serving and working with them all these years.
Was it the show that drew you in, or was it the chance to start doing something again?
It was a chance to get back in and re-exercise those muscles of performing and working with people to tell a story. The show was that darn plot.
It was just a tiny little
comedic story about characters in a play, coincidentally, who are talking back to the author, which has echoes, now that I say that out loud, of what I tried to do in this current adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe. So it wasn't so much the material as the opportunity to work with people again on stage in a new environment.
I know that you do so many, many aspects of the theater, if not all, but do you gravitate toward maybe being an actor or perhaps a techie? Or does it really depend on the role? In other words, you know, I've always wanted to direct this, or I've always wanted to be in that.
So for me, an answer to that question has changed over time.
Hmm.
So when I first began working in theater, it was all about the performance. It was about being on stage. It was about inhabiting a character. Or secondarily, it was about directing. But in 2019, I joined the board at Redlands Footlighters, and I uncovered a whole other kind of joy that had to do more with equipping other people and serving their dream.
Mm.
So now I get a unique thrill by meeting directors, seeing what they need, coming alongside them, and helping that dream happen. And I don't get any credit for that. There's no applause, but there's this pure satisfaction in knowing that you helped someone create a story that had an impact in the community. That's why I say my answer has changed over time, because now I'm in love with the backstage world, so to speak, the administrative side of theaters, as much as I ever was in love with being a performer.
Now, again, I can absolutely relate. At some point in my life, it was one thing or another, but then at another point, I realized that it didn't matter if I was, I don't know, brick in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, or third sailor on the left, or on the tech side, you know, stage managing or directing or raising the curtain. You know, I just wanted to be a part of it. And I felt fulfilled knowing that I was a part of that thing that, you know, people chose to go out and do for the evening. That was an evening at the theater. And so that's why it was fulfilling for me. Catherine, any bucket list shows, or do you just kind of experience as it comes?
You know, I'm around, of course, so many performers and directors, and many of them can answer that question with, you know, their top five roles. You were just having a similar thought where you were thinking, oh, here are some roles that I played or things that I have thought about or memories that jump out.
Yeah.
But to me, it's more about the visceral experience of live theater. I really enjoy shows that are ensemble in nature, where it's not just one or two characters, but it's really five, six, seven characters that are telling a rich story.
Yes.
So I would say no to that in the limited sense, but yes to many, many types of stories. I'm just sort of looking for the things that are not only entertaining, but also somewhat provocative in a subversive sort of way. And so what I mean by that is, sometimes stories, and necessarily so, but sometimes stories are very front and center with their message. You can tell we're supposed to learn something. We're supposed to feel a certain thing or be taught a particular thing.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that. But I prefer stories that propose to entertain, but somehow in there is a message that people can go home and it can change their thinking a little bit, turn the dial in a particular way that draws us together as people, as community members, instead of emphasizing the ways in which we're divided. So
that's
what I mean by looking for stories that are slightly subversive in a way that might not be obvious
to folks when they're looking at our season.
Nice. Oh, that's a really cool way of looking at, well, not only shows, but maybe even philosophy behind picking a season as a board member mm-hmm. would be a part of. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, there are a couple of original shows in the 2024-25 season with Redlands Footlighters Theater. Let's talk about, please, Nevermore, the tales and poems of Edgar Allan Poe. As I stated earlier, this is something that you adapted and directed. Now, before even talking about stories and poems which comprise this evening of Poe, how far back do you, Catherine, and Poe go? I suppose I'm looking for, in essence, the seed for what would, in some fashion, lead to this adaptation someday kind of thing.
What a great question. And this would be the place to insert a fabulous story about how when I was five, Edgar Allan Poe was formative for me. But I'll tell you quite honestly, again, slightly subversive answer to this question.
Cool.
Of course, I was introduced to Poe as a student in school, very familiar with the stories, to the extent that they seem to have always been there in my imagination. So these are stories that I'd grown up with and very familiar with to a certain extent, or at least so I thought until I began researching his life and the other things that he had written. And so I came at this less from the perspective of a longtime fan and more out of a sense of curiosity about what story could we tell with Poe stories that would be interesting for our community or for a community of people to think about. You mentioned that there are a couple of original adaptations in our season. We've been talking for a board for a number of years about how we can move into the space of more original material, thinking about local artists or local playwrights, kicking around ideas, trying to think about what our flavor, what would our spin on something like that be. And so when we were putting the season together for 24-25, it had been sitting in the air, right, thinking about new material. And we began pitching ideas to each other. And before I knew it, I was driving home having pitched this idea of creating an original piece for Footlighters. Like, that was the motivation, that this would be a premiere for Footlighters, a feather in their cap. Around Edgar Allan Poe, thinking, you know, this would be something kind of interesting around the holiday season, around Halloween. And then our president had made the same kind of pitch around putting Shakespeare on our stage and having an original adaptation of Twelfth Night. So we all went home and thought, oh, man, what did we just put on our plate? What are we doing? So it's been very exciting to try to reach that high bar that we set for ourselves.
You know, I mean, I had no idea. I imagined this would be something that, you know, developed over time and, you know, some playwriting workshop way back when, and it's being fleshed out for the... No, you were trying to pick the season and then said, hey, I'll do this.
I did. Perhaps foolishly, I don't know. It was that kind of moment, David, where you find your mouth saying something, committing yourself to something that you must have wanted to do, but the front of your mind didn't know it. And so when I found myself putting myself in this space, I think of it as the creative edge just beyond what you believe yourself capable of, just beyond what you think you might be comfortable doing. That's the space that's the most generative because there's something at risk, right? We have to really stretch and grow. And I love that stretch in the theater, in stories where the actors, the director, the tech, we're really reaching for something that's a little bigger than all of us, and it takes all of us to get there.
Oh, sweet.
And this story is like that. So I've put myself out there in a way that I never thought I could, and the actors have so generously come on board to inhabit the story, and we have these talented crew that are volunteering their time to help us realize this vision. It's the perfect microcosm example of what community theater is at its best. People coming together through this sense of altruism and joy and creative spirit to create a story for their own community. And I just cannot wait to share it with you.
As you were putting this together, did you start with the selections that you wanted to present and then work a narrative into that? Or was there a narrative that you wanted to present which then called out for certain titles?
It was something of both. So after I'd made my perhaps foolhardy and brave decision to put myself forward for this, I began reading and really meditating on the stories, turning them over in my mind like you might turn a puzzle piece in front of you thinking, where does this fit? Reading broadly, thinking, what can be done on our stage, what stories might be in conversation with each other, where are the patterns? And as I did that, I also started thinking about Poe's life, reading about his experiences, thinking about his losses and griefs, what might have rendered him the sort of creative genius through whom these stories would have flown or been presented. And so I began to think about the stories and then his life and turn them all like puzzle pieces until they seemed to begin to lock into place. And so what we ended up creating is a space in which Poe, the writer, is situated in his life, writing these stories, and the stories begin to interact with him and he with the stories.
Mm.
So the stories act as a mirror, I'm hoping. This is my proposition. You'll tell me if it works or not. But the idea would be that the stories act as a mirror for Poe, and that Poe is reflected in the stories. And we're exploring what it means to be creative. There's a bright line between creative genius and madness. And we're thinking about what it does to a person when they're trying to inhabit those spaces. Again, a big goal. We'll see how far we can get. But at the minimum, as I said, I want this to be just purely entertaining. A lot of these things that actors and directors say are for the sake of the actors and directors. What you want at the end of the day is the audience to really thoroughly be transported for an hour and a half.
Nice.
And if that happens, it doesn't matter what the other message is. You've done something great. You've given them a fantastic experience.
That's right. Sometimes analysis can be left in academia
or
not to insult, but sometimes it can be just pure entertainment. And as you said earlier, it doesn't necessarily have to have a lesson or have to have the underlying meaning or the whatever drawn from within, you know, any of that. We'll be getting some well-known Poe and some lesser-known works as well. Can you walk us through the evening? Because with what you've said so far, I'm picturing a man maybe at his desk, maybe addressing the audience, maybe talking to himself, and the audience is getting to eavesdrop on that. And then sitting at his desk, and slowly we see some of the other things. The light goes down on him. The light comes up on center stage. Walk us through, please.
You've done a beautiful sketch so far.
Oh, okay, cool.
So the way the story is shaped is that we have four actors. I'm thinking of them as the ensemble, and we have Poe. And to a certain extent, without giving too much away, the ensemble calls Poe into being. And as he writes his stories, the ensemble begins to inhabit the stories. Poe begins to join them in those stories. And then we see through the course of the evening the interactions, the trajectory of Poe as a man and his life, as a writer, and the ways in which these characters both represent him to us, but also represent him to himself. And again, these are the deep thoughts of someone who sat with the work and maybe is a little too in love with what they wrote.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is that it would just be a really dramatic and interesting way to reapproach these stories in conversation with each other, to give a freshness and a brightness to these stories that we think we already know.
I'm speaking with Catherine Buffy Henshaw, who adapted and directed Nevermore, The Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe. You can get specific dates and times at redlandsfootlighters.org. And by the time this airs, the first weekend of this will have just passed. But again, several weekends to choose from. And this is just a really cool adaptation. So you were talking about moments of Poe seeing some of his works as a mirror, perhaps at least into himself. Do we see that? Here's where you are giving something away, some of those deep actor moments. Do we see any of that where he has just realized, hey, not only, okay, cool, there's a great line. I'm going to keep that. Nevermore. Good one.
Right. Yeah. Oh, what about a raven that says nevermore?
Yeah,
great.
Got it.
Write that
yes.
down. You know, we do. If we've done our job right, you do.
Yeah.
And I think what was interesting going back to thinking about how this particular adaptation began to come together in my mind, I began to think about his loves and losses.
Yes.
And as I began to read the stories, seeing those obvious thematic threads of loves and losses, of people who've died too soon, of the ways in which love can be subverted into obsession or control, right? So
yep.
Thinking about the ways in which he was potentially exploring losses in his life, and this is just armchair psychology, I have no insight into what Poe may or may not have been thinking, but when you line up the stories with the things that happened in his life, we've tried to put those two things in conversation through this hour and 20-minute adaptation to see if there's something that we can learn, or at least to see new insights into some of these classic stories.
Yeah. Back now with KVC Arts, I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Catherine Buffy Henshaw, who adapted several well-known Edgar Allan Poe stories and poems with a few lesser-known titles as well, and that became Nevermore, the Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe, running Fridays through Sundays through October at Redlands Footlighters Theatre. Staying with the Raven for a second, it was only in the all things relative recent past that I read that Poe was not addicted to morphine or whatever it was said to have been. Alcohol and gambling maybe, but not morphine or opium or whatever. The Raven is indeed a poem with a man descending into madness, and I feel like people like to draw parallels to Poe and his, quote, morphine addiction, but isn't this descent into madness purely out of the loss of his love? I mean, well, that's an insistingly annoying bird.
Which, of course, we would all be driven mad if there was a bird in our living room who would not leave and was speaking to us.
Nevermore.
Exactly. I tend to read it, again, not an academic, so I'm not an expert. You have to give that caveat. But I tend to read the poem, as you've said, as a desperate man's cry for solace after a devastating loss. The desire for all of us when we're hurting or when we're seeking to look to those natural symbols around us for answers and to write the answers that we need onto those symbols that present themselves to us. And I think that is a kind of a maddening spiral where we're looking to the thing that we've created to give us the answer that we need, and that answer is always eluding us. So putting that poem in conversation with some of the other stories, we began to see some of the thematic recurrences. And of course, this could be the bias of selection as well, right? Sure. So I'm picking the stories that have the items that overlap, but it's great. Very interesting, I think, to think about them together.
Well, I mean, there's love and loss. The loss of one's heart, the telltale heart, let's say. You're with the telltale heart. This is another well-known piece. This one, though, you're doing something a bit different.
We are. So as a modern reader coming back to Poe with fresh eyes, it's obvious that many of the characters, most all of the characters, are male, right? He's writing from the male perspective. For that particular time frame, it made a lot of sense. But when I began to think about bringing these stories into our community and representing the actors that we have in our community, I wanted to make it more of an open experience. So I began to play with this notion of changing the gender representation. So instead of two male characters in Telltale Heart, as written by Poe, we have these now represented as two female characters. Two women are playing these roles. And it's been really interesting to see the story from this perspective. I mean, often the characterization or stereotype of women is that they're caregivers and nurturers, right?
Yeah,
we're not really thinking about them in the terms in which we might necessarily think about male characters in stories in this way, in terms of stereotypes. So it's been a fascinating experiment to see how this plays out. And I'll be really curious to know if it works for the folks who are seeing the stories.
Oh, I'm very curious. And it hit me that I was asking theory-driven questions, but maybe it could have turned out that you just simply had more women than men audition. But, well, so what discoveries did you make when reversing the traditional genders in this story?
One observation that I made as I was writing this adaptation, I came up against my own barriers, my own biases. When I got to the part of the story, you know, spoiler alert, someone's going to die. So one of these characters is going to kill the other, right? Sorry if folks did not already know that about the story. And when the gender had been changed and we have now a woman doing this to another woman, ostensibly a woman that these two women have a caring relationship, suddenly that brought into questions of motivation that I wouldn't necessarily ask myself in the traditional story. It just is the story as given. Oh, this is what happened. This character is crazy, quote unquote. And so thinking about it by changing the gender, it caused me to reposition myself to the story and begin to ask those deeper questions about what motivates that kind of behavior from a compassionate or sympathetic point of view. Thinking deeply about what it takes or what kind of harm or pain or what drives a person to make those kinds of choices against people they ostensibly care about. And so it just was an observation that when we make those kinds of changes to the structure or to the framing of a story, it shines a light on something that was already there, perhaps, that we had become so habituated to. We could not see that before.
Again, the website, redlandsfootlighters.org. You noted that Poe, to quote, weaves a powerful tapestry of love, grief, rage, terror, and surprisingly, humor. I'm addressing that. A lot of the time during something chilling or dark, we will in the audience get laughter, but often it's that kind of nervous relief kind of laughter. But you're talking about actual comedy. So I'm not so much asking about blatantly comedic things that he may have written, because we don't really think of him as a comedy guy. He's not the Neil Simon of the 1810s, 20s, whatever. But are you talking about maybe comedic elements that you've discovered in what was once thought to be just something dark?
Yes, I think so. But I have a dark sense of humor, and I'm willing to find humor in dark situations. So this could just totally be me, but I would challenge you to go back and read The Cask of Amontillado, for example, and read it out loud. And the interplay between Montresor and Fortunato is quite humorous. There are opportunities there to render those characters as very dry, very witty, or the ridiculous contrasted with the dark motivations of the antagonist. It's ripe for humorous interpretation. And I say that gently and with care. This is not a hijinks version of Poe, right? This is not a carnival version. We're not trying to turn this into a farce.
Good.
You're right, there will be nervous laughter because we need that. We need to release the tension before we can then let it build again.
Yeah.
I'm also hoping that people can see, again, the contrast between genius and madness or darkness and light. You have to have both in order for a story to be well-rounded. So there has to be lightness. There has to be an opportunity for people to be playful. And in order for the seriousness of what they're doing or the choices they're making to have a context. And so that's what we mean by humor. It's not a comedic rendering at all, but it is allowing for the full range of human experience.
Well, since you're speaking about it, though, I can really see that in, of course, The Cask of Amontillado. Again, one of my all-time favorites, I suppose, probably because maybe as a kid, there was some film version of it. I know that there were many. Or a variation I actually do remember from Night Gallery or one of those types of shows.
Mm.
We're talking about comedic elements in a story about a man who gets another man drunk, then he walls him up alive.
Funny, right?
I mean,
that's just
Chipper.
Hysterical.
This is a Valentine's Day show.
Bring your loved one.
We've just talked about several classic Poes, but then there are some less well-known. I don't know if I'll go so far as to say obscure, but let's take Berenice, for example. Is this one included purely because it's a favorite, or perhaps worked itself into the narrative, as you discovered, or was this a very concerted effort that you made sure to include something less well-known to, you know, hey, people need to know about this kind of thing?
A little of both.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those discoveries. So one of the things I learned as I was doing all of this reading and research was how very little I knew about the breadth of Poe.
Mm.
Right? I was not a Poe scholar. I wouldn't want to take any spot in the fan club by putting myself there. Right? I hadn't read deeply about all of his works. I was a light fan, let's say. But as I began to read deeply, there are actually straight comedic pieces that he's written. And there are some very, very dark stories that I thought, wow, where would you get this published? Right? Just, wow, very dark. And so Berenice was one of those darker, shorter stories that I thought, oh, this is rich. There's something here that is quite fascinating psychologically that he's trying to evoke with this story. And I don't want to give too much away because I think this will be a piece that will be of a surprise to folks who come, particularly Poe fans who are not familiar with this story. But it was chosen on purpose, thinking about that darker turn of the creative genius. Like, what happens as a creative person if you lean in all the way and the creativity takes you there to a place you thought you could not go?
Wow. We've been speaking about Nevermore, the Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe, and this is going to be running through October 27th. So many opportunities to see this. Now, I'd hate to make people wait until the last Saturday to attend, but we have something kind of cool for that performance that, well, we don't often get or normally get.
That's right, David. We do run for 3 weekends, and that final weekend, we have a matinee on the Saturday and the Sunday. And so following the Saturday matinee on the 26th, we'll have an opportunity for patrons to stay after the show for a few minutes and have a question and answer session with the director and actors. So we're calling that a talkback session. And it's just exactly what it sounds like. We pull up some chairs, we sit down with the audience or the patrons who want to stay. You're not required, but if you'd like to stay, it's an opportunity for us to talk about the production, to get your questions, to illuminate the experience of producing it, or hear from the actors about what the experience was like in building the character. And the institution of this talkback this year, it's new for us to do this on all of our Saturday matinees throughout the whole season. But the goal was, again, to lean into that community arts connection, where we recognize that we're not producing these stories in isolation. We're actually producing them with the patrons who are coming. Our audience members are part of the production, to the extent that there is no story without the recipient and the hearer to build that story together. So we're hoping to extend that into these conversations that give insight into what it takes to produce the show or what the creative process is like. And perhaps that just inspires them to come back, but it also might inspire folks to get involved.
Oh, yeah, this is like Schrodinger's play. It does and doesn't exist until the audience is actually there.
And that's the truth of it, yes.
Wow. As long as I've been a part of theater, I never thought of it that way. Wow. I've been speaking with Catherine Buffy Henshaw, who adapted and directed Nevermore, the Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe, and again running, in essence, through the end of the month at Redlands Footlighters Theater. More information at redlandsfootlighterstheater.org for this wonderful show and so much more as the season continues. Catherine, thank you so much for your time. I had a lot of fun with this. I got to just kind of theater geek out for a bit instead of doing my job, which, well, it overlaps in this case.
Lucky you. Well, it's been a delight, David. And again, let's talk again after you see the show and you can challenge all my assumptions about what we were trying to accomplish.
That was Catherine Buffy Henshaw, who adapted and then directed Nevermore, the Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe. Performances continue Friday and Saturday evenings and Sunday afternoons through October. And a reminder once again that there will be one Saturday matinee on the 26th with a Q&A with the actors and director to follow. Thanks again to Catherine, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, and Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. For other events in the region, check out our calendar at our homepage, kvcrnews.org, or you can go directly there, kvcrnews.org/calendar. I'm David Fleming with thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.